It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, July 10th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Tech Dirt, founder, editor, and founder of Floor 64, Mike Masnick, on the declaration of war against the Declaration of Internet Freedom by the Paul family, Ron and Rand. Also on the program today, LIBOR continuing to expand. Global warming continuing to happen despite the denials. You cannot believe how many requests for your cell phone, personal cell phone information, authorities in this country have asked for, and a new breed of genetically modified mosquitoes, which will either rid us of dengue fever or something else, which could be worse than dengue fever. And Jan Brewer continues to hate gay people. A brief programming note. We will have pre-recorded shows for the rest of the week. Included will be Guy Lawson, writer for Rolling Stone magazine. He's the guy who wrote that story about the two pothead arms dealers. Some of the biggest arms dealers the U.S. government has ever hired to do some of the biggest small armament deals ever. But he has a new book called Octopus, and it is a fascinating, just an unbelievable book. Spoke to him today. The book has come out today. Check it out. Octopus, Guy Lawson. So we will play that interview later in the week. We'll also have an interview with E.J. Graff from the American Prospect. We'll also have an interview with Steven Weinberg, Nobel laureate in physics. He will come on to tell me how to pronounce Higgs boson. And I'm sure also other things. We don't just bring on a Nobel Prize winner just to give me pronunciation lessons. We'll also have a couple other interviews for you over the course of the week. And before we take a break and go to Mike Masnick, I just thought you'd be interested in knowing that according to Reuters, survey has come out. In a survey of 500 senior executives in the United States and UK, this is particularly relevant in light of LIBOR and, well, I don't know, everything that's happened over the past 3 or 4 years. 26% of respondents said they had observed or had firsthand knowledge of wrongdoing in the workplace, while 24% said they believe financial service professionals may need to engage in unethical or illegal conduct to be successful. 25% of these guys were willing to suggest that this is what business is. Now, assuming that they also have a fairly broad spectrum of what they consider to be ethical, that's an astonishingly high number of people. And the world begins to make a little more sense when you contemplate that. Not to mention all the studies we've seen showing that, well, the meritocracy, basically you have to lie and cheat to succeed within the context of the meritocracy. So on that helpful note, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Mike Masnick, founder and editor of Tech Dirt, about this war, or this declaration of war, on the Declaration of Internet Freedom. We'll be right back after this. Hello, Majority Report listener. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. You can go get a free audiobook now at audiblepodcast.com/Majority Report. Pick up Joseph Stiglitz's The Price of Inequality, How Today's Divided Society Endangers Our Future, and you can get it for free right now. All you got to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Majority Report. That's audiblepodcast.com/Majority Report, and get your free audiobook now. Why would you not? We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Mike Masnick. He is the editor of Tech Dirt, the founder of Floor 64. Welcome to the program.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, First, let's start off with the Declaration of Internet Freedom. This was a fairly small, declaration put out by Free Press, basically proposing that people sign and say that they stand for a free and open internet. How would you characterize the document?
Well, the first thing I would say is that it wasn't put out by Free Press. It was put out by a whole bunch of people, a pretty large coalition of different individuals and groups. Free Press was one of them, and certainly helped spearhead a lot of the publicity around it. But I think what was important about that document was the fact that it was this very, very broad coalition of individuals and groups, many with very, very different viewpoints, who wanted to set up a conversation that was very focused on just basic principles around how important the internet is, and why we believe the internet is useful, and why we worry about potential attacks on the internet, either from government or corporations in some cases, and we just wanted to establish a kind of a baseline. And so a document came out that was very, very simple, as you said, very short, that just basically put these ideas out there for the sake of discussion. It doesn't recommend any specific policy. It doesn't take any particular, partisan viewpoint on anything. It's just, a simple document about basic principles that we believe the internet is important and good. and we would like to see it continue to be that way.
Don't censor the internet. Promote universal access to fast and affordable networks. Keep the internet an open network where everyone's free to connect, communicate, write, read, watch, speak, listen, learn, create, innovate. Protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. Don't block new technologies. Don't punish innovators. And protect privacy and defends everybody's ability to control how their data and devices are used. How do you perceive, what are the threats? When you say government or corporations attacking the internet, what form does that take?
It takes all different forms. You know, we've certainly seen it, you know, over the years where various interests, you know, try and either block out new technologies or new innovations.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. I heard an extra voice, but it went away.
That's one of the ways that they get to you, right, on the internet?
That's right. There's all different ways. You know, a lot of times, companies try and block out new technologies or new innovations, or seek to invade people's privacy or all sorts of things. And the most obvious example that we've seen that got a lot of attention and that led to a lot of to this original document was the fight over SOPA and PIPA, from about 6 months ago, where it was clearly an industry pushed piece of legislation that was really designed to benefit one particular industry, and really kind of attack some of the core principles of the internet that have been around and are part of the reason why the internet is so powerful and so useful.
So that brings us to, this document is, like you say, it's fairly open-ended, and it doesn't necessarily speak about as to it just lists some principles that I think within the context of people who care about the issue of a free internet, a fairly, I think, uncontroversial. And I think it was meant to bring together people from different sort of ideological ends of the spectrum. The Pauls, Ron and Rand Paul, through their Campaign for Liberty, have come out very strongly against this document. And you wrote about this. Give me a sense of how they seem to be attacking this. And you write in your piece on TechDirt that you're a supporter of free market capitalism, or a pretty big supporter. How does the Paul's attack on this sort of run contrary to how at least you perceive these libertarian values?
Sure. And I should be clear on a couple things. One is that, part of the goal of the original document, the Internet Declaration of Freedom, was to get people to think about these things and come up with their own ideas, and not necessarily to agree with the ideas that were put forth in that declaration. And part of what has been interesting and kind of exciting to see is that a lot of different ideas have come out, and different people have spoken out in different ways and suggested their own ideas, and it's led to a really, really interesting discussion, I think. From that standpoint, it was great to see Ron and Rand Paul sort of jump into this conversation. It was never really made clear. They never specifically stated that their document was a response to the other one. So it's, it could be somewhat separate. But if you compare sort of the two documents, they seem to have a very, very different tone. the principles one was, it was designed to be, completely nonpartisan or in some ways postpartisan. This idea of, let's just establish a baseline of principles. It doesn't recommend any particular policy. It doesn't support any particular ideology. It says, let's take a step back from politics. And actually think about, what can we agree on? What can we agree on is good about the internet and that we would like to see continue, and start a discussion about that. What I thought was unfortunate about the statement from the Pauls was that it sort of went in a very different direction. There were a lot of things in their document that I actually agreed with, you know, talking about the importance of innovation and worrying about, you know, attempts to block innovation, which I think is a major concern. But a lot of their documents sort of went in the direction of being very divisive and trying to sort of separate out different things and to suggest that words were really code words for, you know, bringing in, you know, government control or I forget the exact terms that they used. I called it, you know, collectivist.
Collectivism, idea. I think they referred to it. And they said, the road to tyranny is being paved by a collectivist industrial complex, a dangerous brew of wealthy international NGOs, progressive do-gooders, corporate cronies, and sympathetic political elites. I mean, the pros, I mean, you know, put the pros aside for a minute. The spokespeople for Campaign for Liberty saying this is going to be essentially the Paul's new big push after the audit the Fed. And audit the Fed was, interesting enough, also a transpartisan project. Both the left and the right were big pushers of this, Grayson in Congress, as well as Ron Paul. And so, but they seem to be wanting to sort of stake out a position early on. And it's interesting because once you do get beyond these principles, the idea of we want a free internet, the question becomes, what does that actually mean? And what does it mean to you? I mean, in the sense that, I mean, I appreciate from the perspective of libertarians that government can be a vehicle for corporate interests to shut down, to fight something like an open internet. Is there another mechanism? Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense because I'm not fully I don't know exactly where your sense is in terms of executing these things.
In terms of executing, I'm sorry, which?
Well, pursuing an agenda of, let's say, net neutrality, for instance. Mm-hmm. We talk about net neutrality. Both the Pauls and those who want to see government regulate essentially a net neutrality, both want to take ownership of essentially that concept, but want to execute it in different ways. So give me your sense of it.
You know, net neutrality is a fairly complex concept and almost it seems that almost everyone who argues over it uses slightly different definitions, which makes it more and more complex. You know, I think that the concept of net neutrality is a very important one, this sort of end-to-end principle, this idea that when you get on the internet and if you want to build the service or if you want to access a service, you can connect, you know, those two endpoints, you, the individual, or you, you know, an organization trying to reach someone at the other end of the internet. That's an important principle. It's been around, you know, effectively since the beginning of the internet. It's part of what makes it really, really powerful. The fear is that, you know, all this discussion over net neutrality and kind of different debates over what does it really mean. The worry has always been that you know, and this is where sort of the, you know, the libertarian fears, I think, are somewhat warranted, is that you can get a process where effectively certain companies hijack that process and you can create a piece of legislation that really benefits them, even as it claims to regulate them. You know, a lot of big companies are very skilled at playing the regulation game, so that when regulations come out, even if they're supposedly in the public interest or described in the public interest, that they will really be set up to benefit those corporations. And I think that is a legitimate fear, but it's tough to sort of stake out that nuanced position saying net neutrality is important. But you know, actual legislation to support net neutrality can be you know, can be captured by the industry.
Right.
And you know, when you stake out that position, both sides kind of dislike that. and so it's tricky. And I think what it does is it obscures the real issue, which is fundamentally in the U.S. we have a very limited competitive landscape when it comes to internet access. We, you know, most of us have, you know, really one or two options at most, and that allows for very limited, limited ability for companies to focus on what is in the best interest of their consumers, because they can effectively collude to limit how much they have to build out their network. When you look at other countries that have much more competition, network neutrality doesn't even come up as an issue, because nobody would go against that principle, because they would lose all their customers. And so it's, it's the whole fight over network neutrality, to me, is really a sign of a symptom of a problem. It's not the problem itself. It's the fact that we just don't have enough competition in the U.S. And part of that is due to sort of some weird policy decisions over the last few years, that basically handed the market over to, two different industries, the telcos and the cable companies.
Right. That basically, I don't know if those policy decisions were inevitable, in the sense that, we have much. We want to provide networks essentially for all the corners of the country, to the extent that we want to, and we've allowed for certain monopolies by these providers, essentially, which has set up this scenario. But with that,
sure.
That is sort of like literally the facts under the ground. Sort of to allow for new cable essentially to be dropped in, it seems to me the argument is that regulation, this is the argument from the polls as far as I understand it, regulation is bad because you can have bad regulations. As opposed to regulation in and of itself is a neutral tool. And the outcomes are a function of whether or not we have a government that is going to be responsive to a larger group of people in terms of whether or not that regulation works out. And how, in the absence of regulation, would we have net neutrality?
Sure. So, there's a few different issues to unpack, and in general, I'll say that I do tend to worry about the results of regulation, but I think that sort of the Paul's position, to some extent, ignores the fact that we're talking about markets that are already heavily regulated, right? And so, the telco market you described, the issue of laying cables in the ground, for the most part, that involves, government subsidies. It involves, rights of way in order to bury those cables in land that the telcos don't own. They have to get rights of way from the government, the right to basically, dig up your yard to put in cable. Like the highway system, I think a lot of people think that's a form of useful, potentially, regulation, because we build key infrastructure that is valuable, and they ignore that part of it, and assume that there is that the internet sort of sprang up magically entirely through private interest without any government participation, which is clearly not true. I mean, the internet started as a from the government, and much of the telco networks exist because of government intervention. And so if you have that, and there already is government intervention in the market, you can't claim that there should be absolutely no regulation when you already have some. You could argue that we should potentially get rid of that regulation. Well, that's not what they seem to be arguing. They seem to be arguing just for the status quo, effectively, which is a regulated market. And so I think that's, for them to take a position that says that is an anti-regulation regulatory position when it's an already regulated market is sort of, doesn't make sense to me.
Right. I mean, that's one of my biggest problems with sort of libertarian philosophy in many ways, is it doesn't take the world as it is. I'm not sure how we would roll back and go back in time to develop an internet without the government, or at what arbitrary point in history we would sort of say, okay, we're going to roll back to 1992, and everything that has happened since 92, we're going to go back and we'll relay those cables or whatever it is. But I'm curious, like, how could net neutrality, this idea that no service provider, nobody who essentially has the monopoly over the tubes, you know, to quote former Senator Stevens, the tubes, how we could have net neutrality without government regulation?
How they could exist today, or how?
I mean, how could we ensure that those people who control the tubes allow for free access and do not put obstacles in the way between, let's say, my internet stream versus Comcast of MSNBC? How do we do that in the absence of government regulation? Is it possible?
You know, I think, I mean, again, you know, this is a market that is already regulated in some way. So there, you know, it's in there. But I do think that you don't necessarily need to put in a regulation that says we want to keep the internet neutral and trying to express the principles that set that up, because you certainly, you know, and this is where, you know, the libertarian fears come out, is that you could set up a regime that's actually worse than, you know, than what we have today. So I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is that what you do is you focus on trying to increase competition, because if you – so you can have a neutral internet without government regulation because, you know, effectively that's what we have today. For the most part, the internet is neutral without any legislation that says it must be neutral. And it's what we've basically had, you know, for the last 30 or 40 years, depending on how you count. And a lot of that, though, historically was driven by the fact that there was competition, you know,
wasn't it also driven by the fact that there just wasn't as much money to be made? I mean, it seems to me like we've moved into a different era of the internet, where it is now, there's big money to be made out there. And that's a relatively, you know, in the great scope of things, a relatively new phenomena. So, I mean, how would we increase competition without regulation at this point? I mean, changes in regulation. I mean, I get the idea that libertarians are afraid there may be bad regulation. And I accept, believe me, every day I talk about, you know, the capture of the regulatory capture of the FDA, of the EPA, I mean, wherever it is. But I still don't get how we can stop the – it seems to me inevitable that at one point Comcast is going to say, hey, you know, these are our tubes. We've got our own music delivery system or whatever it is, and we're going to favor it. We'll figure out different ways of favoring it. How do we prevent that? How do we develop this competition?
Sure. So, I mean there are potentially a number of different ways, and one I think is really the simplest, which is sort of redefining how we classify the pipes, and you know, whether or not is that regulation. We've already classified the internet in one way, but you know, if you look back, you know, 15 years ago, at which point it was already pretty clear 15 years ago there was a ton of money to be made on the internet, but we had you know, mainly in the dial-up business, which is how, you know, many of us accessed the internet 15 years ago, widespread competition. You had, you know, hundreds or thousands of different ISPs that you could choose from. And what it was that anyone could offer that service, you know, across the network. And you could, you know, set up some servers and then connect to the network and offer an internet service provider service. And then what happened was we sort of reclassified the way we handled broadband so that, you know, the
in the early 2000s, it went from, I think, a classification one to a classification two, which basically switched it from from a telecommunications device to a
information service.
And so reclassification, and that was a fight that almost that reclassification almost happened a year or two ago.
In some ways. I mean, there was a fight over it. It wasn't, you know, perhaps in a limited way. And, you know, I don't know that there's, I'm not speaking from what is, you know, likely to happen. I'm speaking from what, you know, what might actually work. You know, and we've seen in other countries, certainly, that do have rules that allow different ISPs to work on other networks, that there tends to be a lot more competition. And so what it is a question of, at what layer of the network do you want the competition to be? I mean, you raised the point earlier on that, you know, it's not easy to lay another cable. That's a massive expense. In the same way that, right, it's not easy to, you know, put down a competing highway somewhere, right? It's an infrastructure expense. It's a big infrastructure expense. But, you know, what we do allow is for people to, you know, anyone gets to use the highway once it's put down. And so the argument is that you leave the network and you assume that the network is there and you focus on building competition one layer up from the network, which is the service on that network. And that's what we've effectively blocked out today based on the classification, which allowed the telcos to basically say, forget it. You know, nobody else can offer an ISP service on top of our network, you know, or without paying us a massive sum, which, you know, isn't worth it for almost everyone to pay. So you lose out on the competition, but other countries have treated it very differently, and have created a system where there is a lot more competition.
So, I mean, I know, and we just got a minute here. I know I appreciate your giving me this time, but so let me just characterize, see if this characterization makes sense, because I want to put this, I want to contextualize this in a way that is, you know, takes a fairly arcane sort of set of issues, and people can digest it. But I mean, basically, you know, to use the highway as the metaphor, you're suggesting, and tell me again if I've mischaracterized this, but that we need to perceive essentially the internet, the actual infrastructure of the internet, in the same way that we do a highway. In some ways, that it's owned by the commons, and, you know, I guess managed by the government as our and managed to the extent that it's kept, you know, it's serviced in some respects, or, you know, at least in terms of rights. And whereas the Pauls are basically saying, we want to privatize each section of the highway, and we'll allow for private corporations to put up tolls at any points that they perceive they can. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know if I would go as far as some of the things you said. I mean, there are other models there where it's not effectively owned by the commons or even, you know, managed by the government. You can set up systems where effectively what is happening is, you know, a system where you're saying the internet itself should be open to competition at the service provider level. And then you can actually let different companies or individuals sort of own their own piece. And there are some interesting experiments, where you have effectively, not a commons owned network necessarily, but an individually owned network where individuals sort of own their piece of the network, but with the agreement that they're sharing that network across so that anyone can use the different pieces of it. And it becomes sort of a terminology thing, I recognize.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's important to look at, you know, which, you know, how do you define this network and how do you define who owns which pieces of it? And, you know, towards a focus on, you know, what is the ultimate end goal, right? What is the best way to get this network in a way that anyone can use it effectively to sort of build and do something useful? And so to that extent, I agree. The terminology, I guess we can debate over that in terms of what does it mean in terms of who owns what. But conceptually, I think the point is, you know, how do we set up a network so that there is, you know, real competition that leads to real innovation on that network.
Right. And I mean, I think, you know, you can't get away, it seems to me, from some type of some type of regulation. I mean, I share the fear that it can be bad. I mean, that's what the whole fight was, I think, and continues to be from groups that represent the idea of a free internet versus corporations. And in some ways, you know, the government is the hammer, and it's really we're arguing as to who gets to wield it.
Yeah, and again, I mean, the point being, the internet is a regulated, you know, telcos are regulated. So you know, you can't argue that the status quo is a non-regulatory position, because it's already regulated, and there are already subsidies, and you know, Verizon and AT&T exist thanks to billions and billions of government subsidies. And so, you know, if you want to argue for an entirely anti-regulatory position, you would have to explain, you know, what do we do about that? Right. And nobody, certainly not the Pauls, seem to address that issue.
Mike Masnick, founder, Tech Dirt, editor, and founder of Floor 64, I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. We have got to you know what? We're going to say goodbye. Ladies and gentlemen, this week on the program, you've heard. I mean, I you know, sometimes I sit back, and when I'm not having tremendous anxiety about have we found the guest that we want, and I don't want this, we really do take a lot of time in thinking about specific guests. We have Nobel Prize winners on this week. Authors of If You're Smart, making him a best-selling author. Huge icons of the internet. Matt was very excited. Tech Dirt's his favorite. It's one of your favorite blogs, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And you hear about things. I got a tweet from our buddy Jeff Smith that corporate broadcast mediums would never talk about the pharmaceuticals sort of just basically lying to us at different times about what their drugs do or don't do. It hadn't occurred to me, but that's why we're not getting those Celebrex commercials that we've been seeking out so much. Every day I'm on the phone to a Pfizer rep or a GlaxoKline rep and a media buyer, and I'm like, I'm telling you, I've got a great audience. And there's always this sort of weirdness on the other end of the phone where they're just like, I don't know, Sam. I mean, we like your show, but... And I'm like, what's the but? And then it's always like, oh, I got to go. I'm supposed to get home early today because the kids have Little League practice or something. And I always thought it was weird, and it didn't occur to me that the reason why we're not chock-a-block of ads for different drugs that... you know, help you overcome shyness at the expense of massive diarrhea or shaky hands. But it never occurred to me that part of the problem was that we actually report on their malfeasance.
To be fair, that's how you overcome shyness.
What's that? With massive diarrhea and shaky hands. That's how I personally overcome, because once you go that far... There's just like, it's a great icebreaker.
I mean, once it happens at a party, yeah, you can't be shy.
No, you bring people in. That's always been my MO. You bring them into your vulnerabilities, and that's how you create intimacy at a party. And so it never occurred to me. It just never occurred to me. That's why we don't get corporate sponsorship. Although I have to say that, you know, you watch... MSNBC, I at this point, I primarily only watch Hayes' show on the weekends. Half the ads are from, like, you know, Goldman Sachs and energy companies. Because I think they're just, you know, this is where our biggest critics are. We're just going to keep... I don't know, over time, if that influences editorial decisions. I like to think it doesn't. But Matt's going like, it does. It does. It very well may. But not at this program. Because, of course, we don't get any of those ad dollars. And now I know why. But because we don't get those ad dollars, folks, we need your support. Just to do the first half of the show. In the second half of the show today, I'm going to talk about these new mosquitoes. It's so scary. But it's a great way to make money. Create a new mosquito. Issues that, I talk a lot of stories in the better half of the program. We take phone calls.
The story is actually our Kickstarter campaign. We're looking to create new mosquitoes here on the show.
I've been thinking about a Kickstarter, but here's the problem with the Kickstarter. People tell me, you got to have a fundraiser. People call in and say, you got to have a party to fundraise. It's fine to do that, but I don't want to have a fundraiser every 6 months. And if I don't, if we cannot rely on a consistent revenue stream, it makes it that much harder to plan on. Now, all I can tell you is that we need more members to continue this show. It's been, I don't want this to turn into a fun experiment that I can look back on my life.
That Soros money isn't always reliable here is what we're saying.
No. No, he's so fickle. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. One day I call him up and he's like, hey, Sam, great to talk to you again. I'm like, where's it going? And next day it's just like I get his thing where it's just like, leave your name and number. George will get back to you if he can. So, so please, folks, majority.fm to become a member. You can also support this show by getting the Amazon your Amazon junk through our link. I know you actually have to click through from the front page. I've been chastised about this. I know. Every internet marketing course that I've taken, I'm on now my 105th course. I actually have a doctorate in internet marketing campaign. It says, put it on your front page. Don't make people, but it looks ugly. And the site it's the only aesthetically pleasing thing I think I've ever done in my entire life. I didn't do it, but it's the only thing that I've been involved with, I think, that is aesthetically pleasing. And maybe I got to put it at the bottom of the page. I don't know.
And this is coming from someone who's made movies.
Yes, and my movies, the movies I've made have been specifically without any, how do I put this? There's an aesthetic there, but it's not one that's pleasing to the eye. That was by design. People who see how I dress most of the time can understand where I'm coming from. Function over form for me. Be that as it may, if you go to majority.fm/support the show, you can click it at the top of our menu, support the show, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your junk through that link. You won't know a difference. We will. We have merch. If you give us a review on iTunes, that helps. If you donate your account to us at donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm, that helps. But the best thing you can do to ensure that this show continues is to become a member at majority.fm. Coming up in the better half, Super Train. In theory, one step closer to happening. And I've been talking about this for a couple of days, NYPD harassing activists, and also now it is really a stunning amount of inquiries into people's cell phones. Story of mosquitoes. Jan Brewer doesn't like gay people. Is that a surprise? Your phone calls, your IMs, and more. We'll be back live next Monday, but we will have all new material for you for the rest of the week. May not have a show on Wednesday. I'm not sure. We'll see. I'm debating whether or not people want longer, shows or spread out shows? If it's not live, does it make a difference? I don't know. I don't know. All right, folks. See you in the better half.